بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف المرسلين، حبيب إله العالمين، أبي القاسم محمد صلى الله عليك يا مولانا يا أبا عبد الله، صلى الله عليك يا ابن رسول الله، صلى الله عليك يا ابن أمير المؤمنين، صلى الله عليك يا ابن فاطمة المظلومة، ما خاب من تمسك بكم وأمن من لجأ إليكم، يا ليتنا كنا معكم سادتي فنفوز والله فوزا عظيما. With the loudest of your voices, صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. For the hastening of the reappearance of our beloved 12th Imam, with the loudest of our voices, صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. Once again, we thank Almighty Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala for gracing us with this wonderful moment, this wonderful opportunity in this holy month of Muharram, wherein we try our level best to learn and study in order to improve and develop ourselves. Whatever we've been discussing, my dear youth, my dear brothers and sisters, it's for the sake of self-development. Because when there is self-development, then no doubt there will be prosperity and there will be achievement in our lives. What I would like to discuss today is also no doubt a very important topic, which some of our youth today, if not all, are challenged with. And when they are challenged and faced with it, some find it very difficult to navigate through and to find solutions. The topic is youth and identity crisis. And we're going to discuss this very important topic in the following manner. The first stage of the examination, we will discuss the meaning of an identity. How we yet, what is identity? We'll look at it inshallah. Second stage of my examination, we will focus on the components or compositions of an identity. Meaning what makes an identity, identity. And number three stage of the examination, we'll look at different forms or different types of identities. And then the next stage of the examination, we'll ask a question. Do we really need identity or not? What's the benefit of having an identity, of being proud of one's identity? And then the last stage of my examination will then look at the clashes between Islamic identity and other identities. And what do we need to do practically to ensure that we do not lose our Islamic identity? It's very easy, my dear youth, to lose your true Islamic identity, to lose your true Shi'i identity. And so it's important. Now and then we have this very important discussion to ensure that we are all alert and we do not use our identity. First stage of the examination, what is the meaning of an identity? You see, identity simply means something which makes you unique from the others. Group of people, when they think of their identity, it is something which makes them unique from the others. So identity is about being unique in your own way. And yes, this should not give us a boarding pass or an opportunity to undermine others, to ridicule others, to disrespect others. No. It's just simply something which makes me unique or make you unique when you are compared to others. No. You find yourself with people. What makes you stand or what makes them stand is their identities and your identity. So simply, an identity is something which makes one unique from the rest of the people or from the rest of the groups. Second stage of my examination, what are the compositions of an identity? Certain things come together to make an identity. The first composition of an identity is land, your country, where you were born from, where you were raised. Like most of you here, you are from Pakistan. So Pakistan is no doubt a composition of your identities. Someone like me, I'm originally from Africa, from Ghana. That's where I was born and bred. Ghana, no doubt, is a composition of my identity. So the first component of an identity is your country, most especially a place where you were born from. Second component of an identity is what? It's language, it's Zabon. Most of you here, you are Urdu speaking. Urdu is your language. And it is no doubt a composition or a component of your identity. I speak different language from Africa called the Hausa. It is no doubt a composition of my identity. Some speak Gujarati. Some speak Kashi. Different languages. Some speak Farsi, Persian. Language is very powerful when it comes to forming an identity. The third composition of an identity is what? Heritage. For us, you've got your heritage, you've got your culture. I have my heritage, I've got my culture. You've got the way marriage is done in your culture, in Karachi, in Pakistan, in your homes, within your families. You've got your heritage. Family is a very important composition of an identity. I'm from Africa, Ghana. I have my heritage, culture, my family. It is no doubt a composition of an identity. That's why you see people, when it comes to marriages, they've got different ways of doing it. Different cultures with different methods. Although we may all be Muslims, we may all be Shias, when there's naming ceremonies, when a child is born, you like the way we do it in our culture is different from the way others do it in their culture. So language, tribe, heritage, family is a very important component of an identity. The last but not least composition or component of an identity is a religion, deen. Your religion is a very important and fundamental component of your identity. You are a Muslim, and not just a Muslim. You are a Shia Ithna Ashari. You believe in 12 Imams. You believe in 14 Ma'sumin. So religion is a component of an identity. Now, after this brief explanation, I come now to my third stage of the examination, where we will be looking at different forms of an identity. And you realize that each individual, whether Muslim or not Muslim, is of multiple identities. The first form of an identity is national identity. Your nationality. You remember we mentioned, first component of an identity is land. Most of you here, you are nationals of Pakistan. So you have to be proud of this identity because it's your national identity. It's a form of an identity. Someone is British, so that is his or her national identity. Someone is Iranian, that is his or her national identity. So the first type or form of an identity is a national identity, linking a person to his or her beloved country. And wherever you go, you cannot forget your beloved country because it is your identity and you cannot brush it away. Second form of an identity is tribal identity. Which tribe are you? Got different people speaking Urdu. But what is your tribe? What is your clan within Urdu? Which group within the Urdu speaking are you coming from? So we've got what is called tribal identity. You have to be proud of your tribe. You have to be proud of your culture. You have to be proud of who you are. You have to be proud of where you are coming from. There are people, unfortunately, they are not proud of their nationality and they are not proud of their tribes. They want to take others' nationalities and others' tribes. You tell him, you're Urdu speaking, he wants to claim his English speaking. You tell him, you are Khoja, or you are this, you want to claim something else. And I see some of our youth struggling when it comes to this. Be proud of who you are. Allah is the one who created you like that. And there is nothing wrong to be proud of who you are, to be proud of where you are coming from. So long as we do that without undermining others. So long as we do that without crossing the boundaries, without exceeding the limits. So the second form of an identity is tribal identity. Proud of your language. If you can't speak, learn to speak. Yes, I know we are in a global village. And one main language that the world is speaking is English. But it's important to also be proud of your language. Learn, study your language. It's very, very important. The more languages you know, the better chance you stand in succeeding in your lives. I go to the mall sometimes. I see youths. Say, no, I don't understand Urdu. I don't understand Gujarati. I said, look, yes, listen to English modules. It's very important. We are in a global village. You are young. You are educated. But don't forget about your language. The languages are very rich in providing us with so many informations. Yes, you study naturally in English. You're doing your business or whatever in English sometimes. But be proud of your tribal identity. The third and the last form of an identity is what? Religious identity. We are Muslims. And we are Shias, lovers and followers of the Ahlul Bayt. It's your identity. It's my identity. That's where I and you meet. We share a very powerful identity together. And it's crucial we become proud of this identity. Don't shy away from telling the world that you are a Pakistani, Shia, Ithna, Ashari. Be proud of that. So you've got multiple identities and you even add your tribe and your language. There is nothing wrong. So long as doing it is not to undermine others. So long as doing it is not to attack others. So long as doing it is not to wage war against others. Because I see people sometimes, they want to demonstrate their love for their religion. In doing so, they tend to attack and harm and offend others. We don't do that. So be proud of who you are. And wherever you go, be proud of being a Shia. I am talking to you now. I wasn't born a Shia. It took me time with research, going through pains and difficulties to accept the school of thought of Ahlul Bayt. I'm proud of it. You should be lucky because you're born Shias. I wasn't born. I struggled to discover the school of thought of Ahlul Bayt. Be proud of who you are. I see our youngsters, not all, losing their religious identity. Losing it. I see some of our youngsters, they are not proud of being Shias. I don't know why. Shias are not terrorists. Shias are not harming anyone. It's a solid and powerful, intellectual, philosophical, mystical school of thought. And school of thought of Ahlul Bayt helps and helped previously in civilizations, in building people. And we continue to do so. Today, you know very well, we have this organization called Who is Hussein. I know them very well. And I know who started it here in the UK. But I was talking to one of them just now before this program. These are youth who some years ago thought of starting something like this in showing their love for Aba Abdullah Hussein and for the school of thought of Ahlul Bayt. That is being proud of their identity as Shias. There are Hoja boys and girls here in London who started this. And today, Who is Hussein is everywhere in the world. It comes on televisions. It comes on radio stations across the globe. Who is Hussein has branches in more than 60 countries in the world. And it is an official charity registered organization in the United Kingdom that is being proud of you, who you are, being proud of the school of thought of our life. So it is our identity, and we must be proud of this identity. Like an example, during this COVID-19, my mosque, where I am an imam here in the UK, in Birmingham, we opened our doors to give people vaccination. We did that to show to the country and to the world that we are the lovers and followers of Allah, and we are proud of that. We are the first mosque, if not in the entire world, in the United Kingdom, to start vaccinating people. And I went on Sky News, I went on BBC News, I went on so many radio stations myself, and I spoke so many times. If you Google, you will find Sheikh Nur Muhammad vaccination. You will see me on Google, on Al Jazeera. Even those who don't like Shias like Wahhabis, some of them took my interviews and they shared and they encouraged people. That is being proud of who you are and being proud of being a true lover and follower of Allah. And I was even lucky. I was a member of COVID-19 Places of Worship National Task Force in the UK. So these are forms of an identity and some examples, so that you become inspired to work very hard in not losing your identity. So, do we need identity? Yes, we need identity. I must be proud Pakistani. I must be proud Urdu speaking, or Gujarati speaking, or Kachi speaking. And I must be proud of being a Shia, Ithna, Ashari. Being proud is different from being arrogant. You are not being arrogant. Just being proud of who you are and being thankful to Allah. Yes, we need identities. Why do we need identities? Because of three reasons. The first reason is that when you have an identity and you are proud of your identity, it provides you with an opportunity to express yourself within a community. You belong to this community, and you are proud of that community. You've got that sense of belonging. Say you are a Pakistani, and you are proud of being Pakistan. You've got that sense of belonging. You belong to the community of Shia Ithna Ashari, and you are proud of that. You've got that sense of belonging. You know the opportunity it gives you? It provides you an opportunity in the community to demonstrate your God-given potential. I'm just giving examples. Because of being proud of who they are, these youth who started Who Is Hussein, now they are giving so many platforms in the communities. Like during the holy month of Muharram, they are going to different centers, different imam barakas. Even where I'm residing, Madrid, here in London, they came here. They were giving the platform to talk to people, to express themselves, to demonstrate their God-given potential. So when you have a sense of belonging, when it comes to your identity, it gives you a platform to express yourself. See, you are young, you are youth. When you become more proud of who you are, your community will give you a platform. Come and do this. Come and do that. Come and do this. Come and do that. And it helps you, my dear brothers and sisters. The second reason as to why we must be proud of our identity, and we must have an identity, is what? You know, it provides you with peace of mind. That, you know, I belong here. And if I go into trouble, they will not leave me alone. They will support me, morally and otherwise. But if you isolate yourself from a community, and you don't want to belong to a community because, I don't know, you don't feel proud of it or what, when there are issues, you'll not get that moral support. So having an identity, it helps you to get support when you are in need of that support. In other words, it helps you to have sukoon and peace of mind. And we've seen it with our youth in so many countries I've been. Because alhamdulillah, with my work, I'm able to travel to so many countries. So many countries. North America, Africa, Europe, Australia, you name it. Alhamdulillah. And I've seen our youth who are proud of their identity as Shias and proud of their tribes and their countries. Those, when they were in trouble, the communities all jumped and supported them. But those who normally sit on the fence and they do not have this sense of belonging, or they do not have, or they are not proud of their identities, when something happens, nobody bothers because people think they are arrogant. That's two. The third reason as to why we need an identity is what? At-takdeerul ijtima'i. It's, you know, elevate your social status. Because whatever you have, without having a community, is a waste. So when you are proud of your identity, you know, you are respected socially. It takes your social status to the next level. People cherish you, and people honor you, and people respect you. Now, the fourth stage of the examination, my dear brothers and my dear sisters, my dear youth, is the clashes between identities. You see, there is this one last form of an identity, which I would like to mention now, because I mentioned three, which is going everywhere in the world. Western identity, or Western culture, or Western civilization. You may be in Pakistan, but I'm sure, one way or the other, you are affected either in a good way or in a bad way with Western culture. And some of you come to the West or go to the universities in other parts of the world, you get to face Western civilization and Western culture. And normally, when we are faced with Western culture, it clashes with our own cultures, with our own identities, most especially Islamic identity. In other words, what I'm trying to discuss now is what? There is a clash, whether we like it or not, between religious identity and Western identity or Western culture. I'm going to mention some examples of it, and then I'll provide you with practical solutions, inshallah. Because I see our youth, even who are here in the UK or in North America or anywhere in the world, are getting caught up. Some will come from Africa here to study. I see them, I go to universities to speak. They get caught up. They become confused. They don't know what to do. Because university life is different from home life. And the country where you are going, university in, is different from the country that you are coming from. So it's important you become aware of the clashes of these identities so that you are able to navigate through and work your way through. You know, when it comes to ideology, there is clash between Islamic identity and Western identity. And this is very, very important that we understand it. And kindly pay attention to this. In Western culture, this we are discussing ideological differences. There is freedom. Do as you please. So long as you don't harm someone. Freedom. You can work the way you want to work. You've got that freedom. You dress anyhow. Whether it's in winter, in summer, Excuse my word. You can dress half naked. Nobody bothers. Because you are free. Some of our boys and girls, they see this on social media. Because they waste a lot of time on internet, on Instagram. They watch movies. They become tempted in trying to dress like that. Some. It's a clash of ideologies. Islam, there is freedom. But the freedom within Islam is not absolute. It's relative with boundaries. You dress, but dress this way. You can choose whatever dress, but it has to be this way, not that way. But in the Western culture, it's not like that. I've seen in the line of my work, going to different places, our young girls, youth, who will not just remove hijab, but they will go to the extreme, wearing something very tight and short sleeves. This is not Islamic identity. It's not Islamic ideology. It's Western ideology. In the West, yes, you've got your freedom to wear whatever you want to wear. But one can become tempted. And as I said, even those of you who are not in the West, it becomes even more serious. If you do not take care, you will lose your religious, tribal, and national identity. And it is important you become proud of that, your religious identity. So when it comes to ideology, the first difference between Islam and Western Islam is that democracy. Or freedom, if you like. That of West, there is no boundary attached to it. But Islamic freedom, there is boundary. So be aware of that. Be aware of that. Wearing hijab is an Islamic ideology. Removing it is non-Islamic ideology. Because, you know, you find people, they will tell you, you know what? Allah is only worried about your heart. Just be a good person. Dress these. No, don't worry. I said, that's wrong. That's wrong. Allah even tells us what to eat. Let alone what to wear. That's not an Islamic ideology. To say, just be a good person. What you dress, it doesn't matter. That's not an Islamic ideology. Even with the boys. You cannot just dress anyhow. You have to dress decently. Because Islamic ideology invites you to look presentable in a true way of being presentable. Number two, when it comes to Western ideology, they focus on body and mind. So you've got physical health and mental health, which is very, very important in Western ideology. Take care of your body. And take care of your mental health. Don't stress. Don't allow anxiety to destroy you. Don't allow any mental health related issue to destroy you. Go seek help and find solution. When it comes to Islamic ideology, it's not only that. In Islam, take care of your physical health. Take care of your mental health. But you have to take care of also your spirituality. Your connection with Allah. I know youth that I've met on numerous occasions. You'll see them only in Ramadan, in Muharram. But otherwise, there is no salat. They said, no, this is not a big deal. You will do it in Ramadan, you will do it in Muharram. But physically, very strong, healthy. Mentally, very strong, healthy. Western ideology vis-a-vis Islamic ideology. Islam said no. In addition to physical and mental health, you must also take care of your ruhiyah,
your soul, your relationship with Allah.
And some go to the uni and they meet friends who are not Muslims. By the time they realize, they sacrifice their religious identity, let alone other identities like national and tribal identities. So this is on the first level when it comes to ideology. When it comes to behavior, there is a clash between Islamic identity and Western identity, or any other identity if you like. Behavioral identity. What do I mean? See, in the Western identity, when it comes to behavior, you can shake the hand of a girl or the hand of a boy. You can hug the person. No mahram. You know her, you don't know her. You just meet her at school or at work, or you happen to be at a conference or seminar. You can hug her. You can put your cheek here on her cheek. Mixed gathering, proper mixed gathering. We're mixed anyhow, laughing anyhow, is allowed. But Islamic identity says no. You can't shake the hand of no mahram. You can't hug no mahram. Even when there is a mixed gathering, it has to be in such a way that boys on their side, girls on their side. And for the sake of education and proper, healthy, interactive discussions. We see our youth, when they go to universities, or when they become engrossed in spending times on social media platforms, they tend to sacrifice these very important and fundamental religious identity. Shake a hand, somebody will tell me, Sheikh Noor, it's just nothing, man. I'm just shaking her. I don't even feel anything. Just hugging her because she will feel offended. No. If you explain to the person properly, this is my religion. I do not hate you. I respect you. The person will understand because they also have their boundaries. When you step across their boundaries, they will not be happy. It's very, very important. No. When it comes to behavior, nightclub is not big deal in Western society. Music, it's not a big deal. It's top here in the West. But Islam, it's not like that. And I receive so many youth who will come to my office. Shepherd, why music is not haram? Why music is haram? I said, you know, you need to look at it this way. Look at most of these musicians. Look at their akhlaq, look at their behavior. Most of them, what they recite and they sing, you don't even see it in their lives. Why don't you hold unto Quran? Why don't you hold unto Marcia? Why don't you hold unto Noah? Why don't you hold unto Mankabat? Why don't you hold unto Nasheed? So Islam, music as music, is not our identity. But in the other culture, other civilization, music is normal. Boom, 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 is normal. People go to universities. There are nights where there's clubbing. People go to the club. And unfortunately, some of our youths are getting caught up. So it's very, very important we understand these clashes. Again, when it comes to behavior, Drinking alcohol
is normal in Western societies.
Or even sitting around a table where alcohol is served is normal. No big deal. And those of you who will be coming to the West to study at school, you may face with these challenges. But Islam is completely different. There is harm in alcohol. It doesn't just affect you physically. It also affects you mentally and spiritually. So there's clash there. I'm giving you these examples for you to appreciate the clashes. Now on the third level, so we have discussed ideological differences. We've just discussed behavioral differences. On the third level, which is the last one, is when it comes to shi'ar. There is something that Muslims hold as a symbol. And there is something that in the West is sort of a symbol. Having a pet. Pets. In the West, to have a dog as a pet is normal. This dog is a creature of Allah and is very wise, no doubt. Allah created it for a reason. We don't hate dogs, and you can't hate it because it is a creature of Allah. It shows qudra and the creativity and power of Allah. But in the Western culture, the way dogs are viewed is different from the way Islamic teachings view it. The dog is my friend. Some in their houses, dog can come and sleep on their beds, on their couches. They hug dogs. That's Western culture. But Islamically, that's different completely. You can only keep dog when it is for security reasons. But I went to a place to recite Arba'in Majalis, somewhere. And the house where I was hosted, the family, one of the boys in the house kept insisting on his mother and father that they must buy a dog for him. And he's a Muslim, he's a Shia. I need a dog. I want to make a dog my pet. And he was crying, and he's a youth like you, about 17 years. So the parent approached me to speak to him. So I took him out and I sat with him. So I asked him, why do you want a dog as a pet? He said, because I like dogs. Dogs are very nice. They are very smart. They understand things. So I told him, yes, I agree with you. Dogs are very smart and they understand things. But you know, if you keep dog in the house, dog may go and sniff something. Dog may go and lick something. And that will render you not pure. Why can't you get something else instead of having a dog? So I told him, go and think about it. So this is happening. And I know for a fact that there are those who are Shia, Ithna, Ashari, some are being from Pakistan, living in other parts of the world, having dogs in their houses because of the influence of the civilization and the culture they found themselves in. Now you see in Quran, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala speaks about identities, and that identities must be there and they are true. But when God speaks about identity at the end, it tells us that there's one particular identity that we should hold on tightly. In Quran 49, verse 13, you know the verse. Allah calls people. He said, "Inna khalaqnakum min dhakarin wa untha." We created you of males and females. وَجَعَلْنَاكُمْ شُعُوبًا وَكَبَائِلًا. And we made you tribes and nations. Why? So tribal identity. Nations, national identity. لِتَعَارَفُوا. So that you know, إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ أَتْقَى. the most honorable amongst you is the one who fear Allah the most. Now, fear Allah the most here, referring to religious identity. Being a Shia, a Muslim, if not. Tribal identity, very powerful. National identity, very powerful. Or any other identity. But the most powerful identity, you must protect and must try to know it a lot and more, is your religious identity. When any identity clashes with your religious identity, you throw that identity and hold onto your religious identity. Why? Because religious identity provides you with so many things, not only in this world, but on the day of Qiyamah. As I said, I see and I've seen before some of our youth losing not only their tribal identity, but also their religious identity, which is very scary, which is very disturbing. Now, what do we have to do? When you are faced with these challenges of the clashes of identities, what do we have to do to navigate through so that we do not get affected? And even if we are affected, the level should be minimal, should be less. Number one, I mentioned this before and I am repeating it because it's important. Invest your times in acquiring Islamic knowledge. Don't follow blindly. Acquire Islamic knowledge. Ask a lot of questions. Meet the sheikhs. Meet those you think they understand Islam. Discuss with them. Organize forums, seminars to discuss pertinent topics that our youth, you, are affected with. Buy Islamic books. Alhamdulillah, you are in Pakistan. There are so many Islamic Shia books. Because if you do not read, you'll always think the religion is boring. I read a lot. I read a lot. Yes, I don't read only Islamic books. And I'm not reading because I'm just a Maulana or Sheikh. No. I'm reading because I need it to continue enhancing my understanding of this great religion. For instance, there is a book by Ayatollah Shahid Motahari, which is very, very good book, Man and the Universe. Powerful book, Man and the Universe. Read it. Find the book. Say the Mujtaba Musa Bilal, Marhum, from Iran. He has a very beautiful Western civilization through Muslim eyes. Read these books. It will enhance you and equip you with information, and you will be proud of your faith. Especially those of you who are planning to travel to the West for your tertiary or university studies. Prepare yourselves by reading, by attending classes. And not only that, you have to enhance your understanding of the school of thought of Ahlulbayt. Today we have youth in our communities. They'll come and tell you, what's the difference between Shia and Sunni? We are all Muslims. I know a youth in our community, somewhere here in the UK, who said, I'm not a Shia anymore. I'm Zaidi. I asked him why. He said, I don't see any different. They are all the same. And I know someone also, as I went to some place, he said, you know what? Me, when I go to Shia, I pray like Shia. And this boy, originally is from India or Pakistan, I can't remember, but from one of these two countries.
He said, no, me, I study university, I understand. If I'm in the Shia, I pray like Shia. In the Sunni, I pray like Sunni. Ismaili, I behave like him. It doesn't work out that way. All these are happening because people are not giving their religious identity priority. So give your religious identity priorities. So number one, read. Ask questions. Organize seminars. Organize forums. Explore. And one other book is Then I Was Guided of Muhammad Tijani. You Google, you will find it. Alislam.org. All these books are there. This Then I Was Guided, it will help you. You are from Pakistan. There is a book, Bishabar Knight. Powerful book. And you know Bishabar because you are in Pakistan. When you read, it helps you to understand your faith. Otherwise, you'll have doubts. And that doubt may lead you questioning your religious identity, which is not good. And the last but not least, find good role models, good mentors, role models. Could be a sheikh, could be someone in the community who is successful and loves his or her religion. A mother, a father, you must find role models. Our role models are Ahlul Bayt no doubt. But within our communities, we need to find other role models who will help us by just looking at them to get encouraged to do more about our faith. And so the guarantee of today's discussion is what? Let's be proud of our identities. And for you to be proud of your identity, you need to understand that identity. And to understand the identity, you need to read, you need to ask questions. We take our hearts to the holy land of Karbala. And remember, Alamdar, Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam. As you know very well, Umm al-Banina alayhi salam gave her children away to Aba Abdullah. Four children she gave Aba Abdullah on the 10th day of Muharram. And when Sayyidina Zainab, Imam Zain al-Abidin returned back to Medina, you realize that Umm al-Banina every day should go to Jannat al-Baqira and should prepare five domes out of the sand of Jannat al-Baqira. And she would sit and cry and lament over the tragedy of Karbala. She was asked the question, Umm al-Banin, you lost only four children. Why making five domes? Her response was always, the fifth one is Aba Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam. But you know what, Umm al-Banin? When they would narrate the event and the story of Karbala to her, she would cry. But when Hazrat Abbas was mentioned, she wouldn't cry. Until Imam Zain al-Abidin approached and asked her, why is it that when Uncle Abbas has been mentioned, you do not cry? She would respond, I do not believe my Abbas left Hussein alone in Karbala. I know my Abbas would have helped Hussein alayhi salam. That was the moment when Imam Zain al-Abidin began to narrate what Uncle Abbas or Hazrat Abbas did. He said he walked towards the water of Furat. Enemies came and surrounded Abbas. Alamdar warded off the enemies. He went to take the water. When he picked up the water, he looked at the water and he addressed himself. He said, oh my soul, will you drink from this cold water when your master will be filled with the syrup of death? Imam Zalabni said, oh, Umm al-Banin, we saw Uncle Abbas did not drink water. He came back to his house, he rode the horse. While Uncle was going, someone appeared from behind and he struck on the right arm of Abbas.
He said, oh, Umm al-Baneen, we saw uncle struggling to hold the flag. He said, oh, Umm al-Baneen, as uncle was struggling to hold the flag, we saw someone appear from behind, and he struck the left arm of Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas. He said, we saw uncle was struggling. All of a sudden, oh, Umm al-Baneen, Abbas fell down. But you know, when Abbas fell down, you know, before he fell down, Harmula or Harmala struck his arrow to the eye of Abbas. When he struck the arrow to the eye of Abbas, blood blocked the eye of Abbas. Abbas was on the ground. Abu Abdullah began to rush to the body of Abbas. You know, when Abbas was born, he could not open his eye until Hussein was holding him. Now Abbas was going and Hussein was next to him, and he could not see the face of Abu Abdullah. When Hussein got to the body of Abbas, he lifted the head and placed the head on his lap. All of a sudden, Abbas said to Abu Abdullah, let him remove my head from your lap. It's like Abbas saying, Abu Abdullah, now I am dying and I'm on your lap. Whereas in a few moments, someone will sit on your chest, oh Abu Abdullah. Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un. Wa sayalamu alladhina zalamu ala Muhammad. Ayyamun kalabin yankalibun. Wal aqibatu lil muttaqin. Let's pray. Please have your hands. Mu'mineen and mu'minat who are sick, may Allah cure them with his cure. Those who are no more with us in this world, marhumin, may Allah forgive them and connect them to Jannat al-Firdaus. Hazrat Abbas is Bab al-Hawaj. I pray for all of you, my dear youth. May God Almighty fulfill your legitimate desires. And may Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala bless you with his blessings. Ma'atab al-Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein.
La raha hu main lash-e-akbar Umm-e-Layla sambhal Zainab ko La raha hu main lash-e-akbar Umm-e-Layla sambhal Zainab ko Naujawan lash hai zayifi hai meri nazron se dekh manzar ko kaise hum shir ko sambhalunga main sambhale hue Akbar ko tera ehsaan ho gaya mujh par Umm Layla sambhal Zainab ko la raha hu main lash-e-akbar Umm Layla sambhal Zainab ko uske seene se leke naame Ali maine barchi abhi nikali hai imtihan de chuki meri qurbaan ab teri bekasi ki bari hai tu bhi is waqt ya ali keh kar Umm Layla sambhal Zainab ko la raha hu main lash-e-akbar Umm Layla sambhal Zainab ko do nagine the uski jholi mein dono akbar pe kar diye sadqa sabr aisa ke apne beto par maine rote usse nahi dekha है मगर अब ये लाशे अकबर उम्मे लैला संभाल ज़ैनब को ता रहा हूँ मैं लाशे अकबर उम्मे लैला संभाल ज़ैनब को रोक रखा है अपने अश्कों को सबसे छुप छुप के आहे भरती है मैं समझता हूँ मातरे अकबर तेरी ममता पे जो गुजरती है रख के अपने कलेजे पर पत्थर उम्मे लैला संभाल ज़ैनब को ला रहा हूँ मैं लाशे अकबर उम्मे लैला संभाल ज़ैनब को बर मोहम्मद।